Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Hello and welcome to Unbelievable, the show that gets Christians and non-Christians talking. I'm Ruth Jackson and today we return to a live Q&A show that Justin and I did with the late Christian apologist, author and pastor Tim Keller. This week saw tens of thousands tune in to watch a live-streamed memorial service following Tim's death earlier this year. And I think one of the things that has really stuck with me since we recorded this show in December last year was just how candidly Tim admitted that he'd never really thought about actually dying before, but that now, in the face of his certain death from pancreatic cancer, his prayer life, his relationship with his wife Kathy, and his ultimate hope in the Christian faith had never been stronger. Let's join the show.
My wife and I would never want to go back to the kind of prayer life and spiritual life we had before the cancer. Never. Wow. The way you look at your time, the way you look at God, the way you look at your spouse, the way you look at everything just changes when you actually realize time is limited and I'm mortal. In our culture, the mindset is that forgiveness is the opposite of justice, and since everybody's, especially younger people, are very concerned, rightly, about justice, forgiveness doesn't seem to fit with that.
Welcome along. This is Unbelievable Live with me, Justin Briley. And we're really pleased to be joined tonight by Tim Keller. Just before I introduce Tim, though, I'm also joined tonight on the show by my colleague, Ruth Jackson, who presents some of the podcasts from Premier Unbelievable and is head of youth apologetics. Hello, Ruth.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And very much looking forward to our guest who has just popped up on the screen as well, Tim Keller. Tim, welcome along.
Glad to be here, Justin. Finally.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been a little while in the making, this conversation. So I'm really glad you could join us. Just let me just sing your praises a little bit and embarrass you, Tim. Tim is a renowned pastor, thinker, author, well known for his many books, encouraging thinking, faith, making the intellectual case for Christianity. He has a new book out, actually, Forgive, Why Should I and How Can I? And in fact, we've got a link to this in the chat if you want to get hold of it. It's Tim's latest book. Available everywhere good books are sold. So do go and check that out as well. And we'll talk a little bit about that today. But before we get into some of the serious questions, how's the weather in New York for you, Tim, at the moment?
It's great. It's actually cold, in the 30s Fahrenheit, but at the same time, it's clear. So it's actually quite a lovely day today.
We've been having snow here in the UK. So it's very cold for us. But that's not uncommon in New York, is it, at this time of year?
No, usually I would say we would get a lot more snow than London would, but sorry.
There we go. There's nothing more British than talking about the weather.
I was just about to say I wanted to commend you on your Britishness there.
I mean, you've had a bit of a love affair with the Brits. You frequently have come over in your time here, Tim. What's the connection there? Why, as a primarily a US-based pastor and speaker and thinker and author, have you connected so much, do you think, with the UK?
Yes, my wife and I, we believe that probably up until the pandemic happened, there was probably almost a 30-year period in which we came almost at least a couple times a year. Hmm. And the reasons were very diverse. In the very beginning, it was actually my Presbyterian roots. And I would come and largely talk to Presbyterian groups. But then what happened was, which, you know, took me to Scotland. But eventually it accumulates. Somebody hears you and says, oh, I want you to come back and talk to my group. And it just got accumulated. Also, we just also developed not just ministry colleagues, but friends, real friendships. I don't know if they're on, but for example, Ray and Jill Lane in Ambleside, which isn't a bad place to have friends. I just want you to know Ambleside, the Lake District. And so we started to take holidays there too. So that's why.
Oh, that's really nice. Well, look, we've got people joining us from all over the world, not just the US and UK. Ruth, do you want to read out where some of these folks are joining us from?
So we've got a couple of people from Sydney, Brooklyn, Sweden, Ontario in Canada,
Ontario.
We've got Tokyo, Japan, Norway, Manila in the Philippines, Berlin, Germany, London, Scotland, Netherlands. I mean, it feels like everywhere.
It's a very international gathering.
Jamaica, I've just spotted.
Wonderful. Well, feel free to continue adding where you're watching or listening from in the chat. It's wonderful to have lots of people joining us for tonight's discussion with Tim. Tim, we've titled this Walking with God Through Cancer, and because obviously has dominated obviously your story over the last couple of years. Tell us just firstly, what is the latest with your health and treatment and so on?
Well, they put it in a capsule form. I was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer in May of 2020. That, as you all know, that's a very, very deadly kind of cancer. And yet I'm about to celebrate my third Christmas with my family. So the reasons for that is I had 2 years of chemotherapy here in New York City, and it kind of kept the cancer at bay somewhat. And now I'm in an immunotherapy drug trial at the National Institute for Health in Bethesda, Maryland. And that is actually working too. So my cancer is still there. Pancreatic cancer can break out anytime and take you. And yet we've been able to keep it somewhat at bay for a pretty long time. And so we're very grateful.
I mean, Tim, this might be really hard for you to define, or it might be something that you've thought about a lot, but what would you say are some of the kind of highs and lows over this past 2 years, this journey that you've been struggling with?
Well, Ruth, it wouldn't be surprised to anyone else with cancer, or anyone who has friends or loved ones with cancer, that you have to constantly have scans. In other words, you get scans and tests, and they happen. It depends. They can happen every month, every 2 months, every 3 months. And I have to say that coming right up to those scans, we have a word called scansiety. Mm-hmm. Because you know that it doesn't matter how good the last one was, this one could show that it's out of control.
Yeah.
Every single time. And so the low lights are every time you're going in and you're waiting for the test results. And so, I mean, that's obviously one. And the other is that every little ache and pain that you for most of your life, you say, well, that's probably nothing. And now you say, is that the cancer? The highlights, and this is going to sound like an exaggeration. My wife and I would never want to go back to the kind of prayer life and spiritual life we had before the cancer. Never.
Wow.
I spent all my life saying that communion with God, the real presence of God, satisfy us every morning with your steadfast love, which is definitely a request for experience. So what does it mean to satisfy us every morning with with your steadfast love? That can't mean remind me. It means satisfy me with your love. And I spent all of my career telling people it was available and experiencing some of it. But actually, every so often, Kathy and I will say, we're having a much better life now.
Wow. Wow, that's quite remarkable. Just sticking with the journey you've been on, though, in the last couple of years there, Tim, I remember, I think it possibly the last time I connected with you on the show was to talk about your book, Walking with God Through Suffering. Mm. Obviously, that was written in a different time of your life. Is there anything you would revisit now, having spelled out the theory, now that you've kind of lived the practice of it? What was there anything you'd write differently or think differently now?
No. Mm. Now, I'll tell you, I hope that doesn't sound arrogant. The fact was that I wrote that, let's see, I guess I was already 60 something, and I'd already been in ministry for 35 years. And therefore, I walked with an awful lot of suffering people who suffered worse than I did. And so I learned that from the Bible and pastoral experience, not from personal experience. But it turns out, I guess, that most of the people I walked with, the things that helped them, the things that comforted them, the things that you might say worked for them. I mean, obviously, work doesn't mean get rid of the pain or the suffering. It means that you can endure it and even grow in it. And those things actually have, yes, they have worked for me, using the term work that way.
I mean, Tim, do you think there's anything that you would say that you've learned in this time that you perhaps didn't know before? I mean, you mentioned walking alongside people, and obviously you would have experienced suffering, but I guess nothing to this extent from a personal perspective.
Well, yes, I already mentioned the fact that it's almost like when it comes to prayer, I really thought that I, you know, had a good prayer life. And when I broke through into another dimension, I realized, my goodness, I was much, much, much less. Frankly, my prayer life wasn't very good. But the other thing I would say is everyone knows they're going to die. And yet everyone knows that they really, in some ways, repress that and live as if they're never going to die. We all know that. We all say that. But it's not till you have not just cancer. I had thyroid cancer when I was a 52. But the first thing the doctor said is, this is very treatable. Pancreatic cancer, the first time I talked to a doctor, my doctor says, you're going to die of this. It's sooner or later, because we don't have a cure for it. And I realized I never really did believe I was going to die. At some deep level, I just didn't. And I don't think there's, looking back on it, I don't think there's any way to go through the change that happens in you when you know you really are going to die. The way you look at your time, the way you look at God, the way you look at your spouse, the way you look at everything just changes when you actually realize time is limited and I'm mortal. And I would have lived a better life if, frankly, in my 40s, I'd been able to do it.
Yeah,
there is some kind of denial that's there that just will not go away until you actually have a doctor saying you're going to die of this, and you could die of this within weeks. It all depends.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, this whole period has forced you, as a very active person in ministry and so on, to step back, to put a lot of things on hold. How have you coped with, as it were, being less active in a kind of forced way because of this?
Justin, it's been great. The thing I saw was that I actually was too active.
Right.
And I'd been too active for too long. And even though I am still less active than if I didn't have the cancer, I'd probably be a little more active than now. But it's actually, I'm closer to where I should have been most of my life. I am very blessed in that God did not make my relationships with my sons are good. My sons are believers. I'm got a great relationship with my wife, and that is nothing but God's grace, because I was too active. And everybody, I felt like everybody said, you have to do this for me. And okay, I have to do this for you. And no, the answer is it's been great to be less active. It's been good for everybody around me and me.
Tim, your latest book, as Justin mentioned, is called Forgive. Why
I'm holding it up now.
There we go. Get a look at that. Why this topic of forgiveness, and why now, in the midst of everything you're going through?
By the way, Ruth, I could have dedicated it to Justin, because the number of times he's asked me to be on this program, and I've said no. He's clearly a very forgiving person. So he could have been dedicated to him. He came in third, though, so
endless patience with you, Tim. Endless patience. No, seriously.
Well, I did sense that we have a more that we're losing in the West. We're losing our grip on the value of forgiveness. We have more and more people not only showing that they will not forgive, they don't forgive. They're pretty harsh and combative in their general demeanor, in the way in which they talk to people. But some just speak right out and say forgiveness is not a good idea. And what I try to say in the book is there's partly that I understand that, because forgiveness in many cases has been abused, as when you say to a woman in a church who's been sexually abused, and you come to her and you say, well, you know, you have to forgive your perpetrator. He repented. Mm-hmm. So you need to meet together, and he repented. You have to forgive, and you can't go to the police. You can't, you know, so that's an abuse. that's an abuse.
Yeah.
But because the reality is that forgiving is not opposed to seeking justice. As a matter of fact, if you don't forgive, you won't seek justice. You'll seek vengeance, which always is going past what justice demands, and it always eats you up. So I would say you do need to forgive and pursue justice. It's not either or. But right now in our culture, the mindset is that forgiveness is the opposite of justice. And since everybody's, especially younger people, are very concerned, rightly, about justice, forgiveness doesn't seem to fit with that. Yeah. So I thought I'd write a book that just lifted up the biblical material, but tried to apply it to our cultural moment.
When it comes to our cultural moment, it feels like, I know exactly what you mean when you say we're living in a sort of more graceless kind of culture. How do we, I don't know, swim against that tide? Because we're all to some extent, I think, being swept up in these culture wars where it's a very combative, divisive, you know, kind of game. What do you think? What can Christians do to sort of be, I guess, Jesus in the culture we're living in?
I'm not really going to be able to give you some real great answer, Justin. Everybody's going to say, wow, Tim really. No, I think the answer is we have to do it with great difficulty and tenacity, which is to speak the truth in love. If you're not clear about what Christians believe, then there's no possibility of persuasion. But if you're not loving in the way in which you speak, there is also no possibility of persuasion. And Paul says, we persuade. And the idea is not to either cozy up to people, you know, and just get them to like you if they have a different opinion, but at the same time, not to pour out on them and just bash them. So I think it's very difficult, because right now that's just not what's out there. And so I don't have a secret. Mm-hmm. There's no secret sauce.
I mean, interestingly, though, your name came up probably 6 months or more ago in regard to this sort of whole question of how should Christians conduct themselves in the midst of these questions, because there was an article written which questioned whether we need to move on, essentially, from the from the winsome style of Tim Keller that maybe was suitable for a kind of what it called neutral culture, where Christianity, right, while not being reviled, was not particularly praised. It was somewhere in the middle. Now it says, hey, we've moved on to a culture where Christianity is seen in negative terms. And it's almost a bit like you've got to fight fire with fire. You know, you've got to go in with a more kind of combative, assertive. You can't just say, hey, let's all try and be friends and speak in a winsome manner. So you got, I guess, you know, your whole sort of way of doing things was being questioned and challenged in that kind of conversation that was going on in social media at the time. I'm sure you got wind of that, Tim.
Yes.
What's your feeling on that whole sort of, you know, debate that sparked?
I'll say two things, pretty brief.
Yeah.
Because I still think this is a little more of a US issue than a UK issue. And in the United States, up until fairly recently, if you lived in big parts of this country, especially in the Southeast or the Midwest, or even lots of the West, at least away from the coasts, Christianity was seen either as a positive or as a neutral way. It was either regarded as positively or neutrally. Okay. That was not the case in the Northeast. In New York City, when I got here in 1989, no. It was much more like it has been in the UK for a very long time, or Europe, which is Christianity is seen as sort of, at least, just, you know, we tried that, it didn't really work. I mean, that's the European approach. We've tried that, it doesn't really work. And it is negative. I mean, it, not necessarily always hostile, because British people tend to be a little more courteous than Americans. but it's certainly disdainful. And an awful lot of Christians in America just did not experience that until fairly recently. And so they say, well, the Tim Keller Winsome approach doesn't work. Well, listen, the Tim Keller approach was forged in New York City. And I'm sorry, it was never a neutral or positive world. Mm-hmm. So whatever you say about my approach, I was forged in a negative world. The second thing, though, is, and this is really where it becomes more US than UK, and this is the people who are saying it's time not to be so winsome. These are folks who actually want to change the political world here. They would like the state to be more overtly Christian. They want Christians to be much more politically active in bringing that about. I think that's a little bit hard for most of us, like my British Christian friends, to even understand. Mm-hmm. And what they therefore don't want, and you can't be winsome there. You basically have to get political.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks feel like my approach has always been to say, and I will say it right now, is whatever our political future is, and there is a problem. In fact, it is also true in Europe, too, that there's the rise of the right, there's the left. There's no doubt there's instability, and I don't know the way forward. But I think that there's room for differences of opinion amongst Christians who are united on the gospel. Mm. But they would rather me not say that over here. They would rather say, no, the Christian church has to be aligned with a particular political agenda. And that's really their motive, I think. And I think it's a little hard. Frankly, I do find it hard because we're very much in touch with people in Africa and Christians in Africa, China, Europe. And they're trying to say, what's going on there?
Yeah.
What in the world? Yeah. And I said, well, you have to understand right now there's a movement among some Christians who say we have to be more politically aligned.
Mm. There's some interesting comments in the comment section as well, sort of, you know, saying what it's like in their context. And do please keep those comments coming, and do also keep your questions coming, because we're going to be throwing to your questions very soon. But before we do that, Tim, over the past year, you've published a series of sort of lengthy essays on Gospel in Life, on the decline and renewal of the American church, and sort of presenting its challenges and opportunities. Obviously, you're speaking within a US context, but I'm well aware that you have a pretty good handle on the global church. So what are some of your main fears for the church right now? And I guess on the flip side, what gives you hope for the future of the church in the West?
Well, I'll give you three of each, Ruth.
Excellent.
Okay? It's not just
a true preacher.
A true preacher, yeah, except that they don't all start with the letter P, because I'm not Welsh, I'm American. Well, the three fears are when people lose their hope that the church can actually thrive in our modern culture. When they lose hope, there's three things they can go into. One is you compromise on doctrine. You compromise on historic faith and practice. You say, we're just going to have to change that because we'll never get accepted. So you compromise. The second possibility is you withdraw into high walls around the church, and you basically are just going to keep hold of your kids and grow the church biologically, like the Amish. Okay. And the third is you get very combative and you say, we're going to try to take over the culture and let Christians run things. And I do fear that all three of those are certainly possibilities in the United States. And my guess is different parts of the world would be different. The three hopes are the growth of the global church. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it that overall Christianity is growing. And by the way, it tends to be shrinking in places where the, as you know, the birth rate is also shrinking. And what that does mean is overall, you looking forward, Christianity is not going away in any way at all. It's growing and it will continue to grow. The second hope I have is that Jesus actually said the gates of hell are not going to prevail against my church. You know, and there's no, like I like to say, there's no expiration date on that offer. And then lastly, I actually think secularism looks exhausted, but I'm not going to, it doesn't look to me like it's really confidently saying we really have all the answers to all the basic human problems. So you put all that together, I got a lot of hope, but I still have a lot of fear.
Yeah. 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 The church is not perfect, but it's often a lot better than secular humanism in terms of the answers.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, so much I wish we could continue talking about, but we must go to some questions from our audience tonight.
I just want to quickly jump in here and say that if you like what we do at Premier Unbelievable and you want to support us, we would obviously love you to do that. If you do feel able to support us financially to continue producing shows like this, all of our videos, podcasts, article resources and more, then we will send you a free ebook. The book is called In Conversation with Tim Keller, and it's based on some of the conversations that we've had with Tim over the years. It covers many of the topics that we talk about in today's show: suffering, theology, God, and ministry. If you are able to give, then there are links in the podcast, or do go to premierunbelievable.com/Keller, and we will send you this ebook as a thank you for your gift. Thank you so much. And now back to the show.
I'll dive in with the first question. There's so many brilliant questions and really honest, heartfelt questions. So thank you so much for sharing so honestly. This is from Joseph, and he says, I'm a primary caregiver for my mother who has stage 4 skin cancer, and she's definitely had those lows that you spoke of. When she has those lows, what do you think is the most helpful thing for me to do to push her closer to Jesus, as we both know that the end is very likely near?
Well, here's what I like to do, and it's almost a trick, and that is to say, I want to pray for you. Now, you say mom, dad, whoever. You say, I'd like to pray for you, but tell me, in what, I want to go to God right now and pray for you, but is there anything in particular you'd like me to be praying for? Anything in particular? What that does is, first of all, make sure you have time, because very often if you say, if you're actually saying, can I pray for you before we leave? That means you got to go. But if you actually say, how can I pray for you? In what way? Then very often you'll have a 5, 10, 15 minute conversation where the person pours something out that's really bothering him or her, that is great, that for just to have you listen in a non-judgmental way and say, of course you feel that way.